Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. I bet you get 30, 30, I bet you get 30, I bet you get 20, 20, 20, I bet you get 20, 20, I bet you get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month, sold.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weight loss. That's PlushCare.com/weight loss. PlushCare.com/weight loss.
Hello, 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 hello. Good morning, good afternoon, and good evening, wherever you are. My name is Alex Q, and welcome to the first Miscast Minisode. out of this world. Out of this world. As you probably guessed, we've been peer pressured and pushed into doing a Worlds episode because everyone's bloody well doing it. And so we thought we'd try and do a tiny quick pushing episode, throw it out there for all your glorious ear holes to get in. So today we're going to do a really, really short pre-Worlds mini-sode. So to help us along, we've got a very special guest
to interrupt there. This is like Steve Curtis's and Jack Armstrong's dream, isn't it? There's going to be no.
There's no fat at all on this. So congratulations.
For your dog walk, Steve. You'll be very pleased to hear.
You have to fucking start running, Steve. Start running on that dog walk. So today we're going to do a quick little mini-sode about pre-Worlds, which is quite a nice kind of roundup because our first ever episode was post-Worlds. And we'll come back and do a proper full fat episode post-Worlds. Owen will be joining us for the post one. But for all you sexy sock fans out there, which is all of you listening to this, I'm afraid our dear sexy OJ is practicing for his two-turn games at Worlds. And he has to get a lot of two turns in before he goes. So he can't join us for this. But as I said, we've got a very special guest coming in anyway, so it's fine.
Well, I interrupted your introduction then, and you still haven't introduced him. So crack on.
Well, I was going to introduce you first. So it's Darren, obviously, at Positive Victim on Twitter. Hello, you're right.
Hello, lovely. Yes, I am absolutely grand. I've had a day full of one-to-ones, and they've been absolute cracking. I really enjoyed it.
Are they Worlds-related one-to-ones?
No, they aren't, but one was a training game for a game that's coming up. And that we did a bit of TTS work, and it was enjoyable. In fact, our guests photobombed us and joined us as well.
Did you, Luke? Yeah, you do some photo bombing.
Video bomb.
Yeah, jumped in, pulled a Rasby, told me I was wrong, and then fucked off.
Isn't that what all the onwards AOS coaches do?
Yeah, I am wrong a lot.
And speaking of onwards AOS, if people want to get better at their Age of Sigmar gameplay, Darren. I want to find someone to help them. Where would they go?
Well, I'll tell you what, let Luke answer that, because he's one of our most prominent coaches.
Yeah, but then I have to introduce him properly. Right, let's do it then. So, our special guest today, who's come in to have a quick chinwag about Worlds, you've seen on the twits already. He is good at this subject because he's probably written all the lists there. So if you're going, he wrote your list already. He is a current, until Worlds, a current champion of the world and multiple GT winner. It's at @in_thebin. It's Luke Morton. Hello, Luke.
Hello.
If it was a full episode, Luke, I'd be doing my boxing introduction, but you just get this one. So I'm sorry about that, but maybe I'll add it in at another point.
All right, it's just a bin. It's just relevant. Just give me a bin intro.
Yeah, the intro is just in the bin. It's a bin
Alex
intro.
In the bin now. That's it. It's over.
So you are also an Onwards AOS coach. So if you want to plug your services, this is the time.
Yeah, I mean, if you want to get better at Age of Sigmar, the best way is just to go on Onwards AOS Patreon and sign up. And then Darren and all the other coaches can make you better at Warhammer. Maybe I can as well.
You perfect. Definitely can. I get lovely feedback about all the people Luke works with.
Out of interest, if I were to go on to Onwards AOS and I wanted to pick a certain coach, am I allowed to pick who I want?
Yeah, of course, 100%.
I'd say I was like, I don't really want Darren or Luke. Can I get someone better?
It's your dollar, brother. So brilliant. You spend it the best way you want. Absolutely, that's an option.
It's a bit expensive, this one right now for you, isn't it? So you want to start...
Yeah, we were saying pre-recording that they're both going to charge me for this, because this is a double Onwards AOS coaching session. So, and it's expensive. This is an expensive episode, listener. So I hope you're enjoying it already. Right, let's get straight into it. No faffing around. Worlds is coming up, which you're both au fait with and both been in. Obviously, mm-hmm. You both won it last year. So quickly, we're going to have a quick chat about what's it like playing into different matchups at Worlds. If you don't know what Worlds are, by the way, go back to episode 1 of Miscast, where we talk all about it, and we talk all about Darren winning everything, and we go into what happened. So if you don't know what Worlds is, go back to episode 1, listen to episode 1, and then come back to this one.
Darren and the team. I didn't win everything without the team. That's an important
How very point. PC of you.
But yes, I was Darren. Part of that team as well.
Yeah, that's why I said both of you.
Darren, right, okay.
So yeah, we're going to talk about playing into what a good or a bad matchup, so a green or a red matchup. I've asked both of these fine gentlemen to do their predictions, which is obviously recorded on the interwebs forever and ever. What their prediction for top three nations and top three performing factions is going to be. And then I get to come back and laugh at them if it's right or wrong afterwards. And then finally, we'll talk a bit about what list they would take. So let's get straight into it. Luke. It has been posited that you write every list for Age of Sigmar. And
especially Jeremy's list. He even comments about it on Twitter. I definitely wrote his list. I hope he's enjoying my list. Darren also used this list. So you can also comment how good that list is that I wrote.
That list is very much Jeremy's. I put a little bit of a twist on it, but that was because it was specific to the event that I was going to. So there's not that I think there's anything wrong with Jeremy's. And it plays so much better than you expect. It's an absolute joy to use. To try and balance things from Luke just winding Jeremy up.
I mean, the other person that says he's involved in writing everyone's list is also Aussie Stew, who we had on 2 episodes ago. So he might also disagree with you. But so obviously Worlds, Luke, is a lot of, you know, you're playing into various good matchups, bad matchups, playing into playing into green or red, I guess we should call it. And so I guess go with last year. I'm assuming you approach the different matchups differently. So let's start with green. Let's start with the green ones. So when you're going into a green matchup and when you're playing a green matchup, how do you tend to approach it? Do you are you thinking when you're going in, I'm going to be super kind of aggro with this, I'm going to try and kind of win big as you're playing more aggressively? Or actually, are you the reverse? Are you thinking, crap, I've got to do really well here, so I'm going to be a bit cagey? How do you approach these sorts of kind of good matchups where you think I should be winning here?
Well, I think a large part of you, it's not really anything to do with your question, but a large part of greens and reds is in the prep before the tournament. So your build lists that will take reds, and then your build lists that will take greens. So
yeah,
you're in the pairing process, because it's very, the pairing process, you could probably do 20 episodes on it. It's very complex. I know a lot. Rob will go on about how we said that we paired mainly into the missions, but that's only a small part of pairings, is like pairing into the mission. And the problem with that is everybody, if everybody starts doing pairing into the mission, then they're all doing the same thing. So is pairing into the mission the right thing at that point? So you've kind of got to just pair at the time. And
yeah.
Right. Do you know what I mean? So you got to try and pair right. So it's like, so if I say your questions are, I'm in a green matchup because my captain's paired me into what he thinks I should win.
Yeah.
Then the only way to know that it's a green matchup is that you kind of practice it before, or you kind of know how that's going to go. So playing into that green doesn't necessarily mean you're going to play aggressively, because if the opponent knows, they might have prepared. They might have been buffed, like I just said. So your build lists are green and red, but that list is prepared to play a red matchup and still get points.
Yeah.
So,
and do you personally find you play differently if you know that, or do you just play the same way, whatever?
There's no way that I'll play. I'll adapt to my opponent every turn. I'll try to. I mean, it doesn't necessarily mean I'm going to win all my games, but that's the beauty of Age of Sigmar, right? It's just that even if the game's getting is simpler, it's still interactive game with your opponent on and off the table. So it kind of affects how you're going to play. You can't just play one way into one matchup, but no, unless it's so skewed in a way where that green is like a massive green, then you know if you kill, I've probably given something away here, but say KO plays Lumineth, and the Lumineth army has sharpshooters, all that Lumineth army has to do is go first, kill the chemist with the bridge, and then kill the ironclad, and then all the thunderers are doing nothing, and then that game should be a win.
So that's
just one example, say this year, of the meta of what you do if you're paired into a massive green.
That makes sense.
It's hard to... you can't just... Yeah, I don't know how you would just approach a green. Because the problem is, if you go too aggressive, you might end up losing.
Well, I guess that was the kind of crux of what I was wondering about, is whether you... You know, because lots of people have spoken about this kind of these high kind of pressure tournaments and these matchups where you feel like you should be winning them, and then kind of how you go about going into those. But I guess it sounds like what you're saying is that you will react to your opponent whatever anyway, rather than thinking, well, I need to put the pressure on here because I'm a green.
If I'm doing the pairings, I'll have a player that is on a list that I don't necessarily think they're going to win all the games, but I could pair them in a way that I know they might end up losing. So that the people just call this the bus, but I know that they've practiced it enough that they can still get points, because that is getting points out of a red matchup is way harder than just 20-0 in a very, very high green matchup. Cause you've paired that. It's just the pressure is higher for the person to get the 20-0 because that's what they're expected to do. But I think in this game, you should never get 20-0. So you should always have a way of getting points.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Just how many can you get from a red matchup? So it's definitely harder to get, I don't know, say 4 or 5 points out of a red, or even 3 or 2 if you've taken away an army that's good into everybody else.
Yeah.
And you still get 2-3 points out of it, allowing the rest of the team to get bigger scores, then it just depends on what you want out of it.
Yeah.
All in the prep before, for sure.
And with that prep, obviously, well, taking last year's example, so we've talked about Darren Seraphonis kind of being the top dog. Is that fair to say, Darren? The kind of top dog faction at the time. And obviously then there was a lot of pressure to go and like smash face with that one. Do you, Luke, get put on more kind of, I guess, uber green factions when you play these, or are you happy just doing whatever?
So it's very hard for me to make a decision on an army because I just tend to play all the armies, but just not particularly very, well. But so it's very hard. So at Worlds, it was a bit of a problem because I ended up going on an army that I liked, but the army was very, very strong. And that army got taken off me. And then I had to decide on an army.
What was that? What was that?
Everybody were pressuring me to go and play Kragnos. So I just made the decision to play Foxes. it bullied so much in the pairing process. But essentially, in that meta at that time, Foxes probably wasn't the better choice because it's not as strong as... It's just one of them very negative armies that can play... You know, if you pair it into a massive green, it probably does get you a massive score. But it can also bully the other top armies and still get points out of the other armies. So like Seraphon, I played a guy called Sven and I still got points out of him, even though the army was pretty oppressive back then.
So
with Foxes. I'll just play whatever is required. So I did one recently, Blood Tithe. I probably could have just taken Courage and Overlords and done way better, but I took a Skaven army. The reason why I took the Skaven army is because it could get in Blood Tithe. You can't get 4 greens. If you're playing someone of equal pairing skill, you'll probably get 1 green, 2 yellows, and a red.
Yeah.
So the Skaven allowed me to just take red matchups, but there's always that roll off chance or priority roll. It's just a very like oppressive damaged list that could still win a red matchup, get big scores from the top armies like Gitz and Lumineth. And KO out and about at the moment. So
it does it quickly as well, doesn't it? So if you do get that cheeky win, then you can run up and down. Oh, fucking won a red, you know. It helps your team out, doesn't it?
Yeah. So because I've done a lot of like, so Darren's in similar position, whereas we've been coaches and captains, I'll always try and make sure that because. In the pairing process also, it's not just about pairing army to army. The players, looking after certain players, so certain players who are very good, probably some of the best players in the world, you can pair them in a way, if they win, they just keep winning. But if they lose, even though they probably lost and still got you points that you needed, sometimes they just crumble. And then they'll just lose more because the head's gone. I don't mind playing any army, so I'll make sure the best armies are delegated that I can pair correctly, and then I'll just take what's left. But I also just try and take a skewed list that can still give me the ability to still win games. So Darren probably did this. Well, me and Darren have been on quite a few team events together, and he did this in the first Brotherhood. He just took an army that nobody saw coming that could still win all games.
It did all right. I got 4 out of 5, I think.
That's a very nice segue.
I went 5-0, didn't I? Yeah, I went 5-0. Yeah, lovely.
That's a very nice segue into Darren. So do you? I guess we've talked loads about how you play on this, and you're very proactive. So do you do the same thing as Luke does? So you've kind of, are you seeing, or are you going full for the throat, like with the Seraphon last worlds?
So I can take worlds, you know, as the example there. So I'm on Seraphon, and so that makes me the big hitter. And Luke and Jack and Tom did a very good job of getting me good matchups. But there is pressure. There is a lot of pressure. So I try to treat or imagine every game as just a normal sort of game. You know, I was thinking to myself, I'm not going to do anything. I'm in a good matchup here. I've got a green. You know, I'm not going to do anything. I'm quite positive, and I'm going to go for the win. I certainly didn't hold back to. Actually, no, there was one point where I did actually a little bit, and I'll explain why. I try to imagine every game was just a normal game. I was trying to imagine that I was in the driving seat for the vast majority of them, but there were two instances where that didn't feel correct. I ended up in a red matchup. The one time I did end up in a red matchup was against the French Zinch player. So it's a very, very important round. And in actual fact, the fact that I needed to actually get points out of this game because we almost lost that round against the French. At one point, it looked like we were going to lose it. And the two people that are in reds actually ended up with wins and dragged us through. That was me and James. James did it with like three models from turn two onwards. Absolutely fucking mental. Well done, James. Tom comes up to me and he goes, right, you've got Zinch. But don't worry, it's a red matchup, but everyone else has got good matchups. So he's kind of taken the pressure off me, which is fine. But there's a little bit of me that fucking hates losing. I set up in such a way that I can, in the deployment, I notice that I forget the French chap's name, lovely chap, had a big beard. He sets up in such a way that he puts 10 of his pinks and the blue scribes on one flank. And I know he's got bridge, and I know it's the mission where if you get three objectives, the game's over. And obviously he's got numbers on his side. And he sets up his pinks and his blue scribes, but he doesn't screen out the back enough. And I'm thinking to myself, I can get a prime in there. And I'm thinking, if I get the choice of going first or second, if I go first, he's expecting me to go first. If I go first, I'm going to be able to bring my prime down. I'm going to be able to kill the blue scribes, and I'm going to stop that automatic. I'm going to be able to stop that automatic soul screen bridge. And in actual fact, all the pressure's now on him. And in fact, that absolutely happened, and I ended up winning that game 16-4, even though I was in a red matchup. My point is, you don't just because you're in a red matchup, don't treat it like it's absolute. You know, you've got no chance. Give yourself some outs, you know, in deployment, or just pay attention to your opponent. I imagine he was very much thinking, I'm in a green matchup here, and basically his deployment was sloppy. So you can. You've got to treat every situation and every game with the respect it deserves. So if you're in a green matchup, fucking play Immaculate Warhammer at Worlds, okay? Deploy optimally. Screen out the back of your army if you've got a weak character that's really pivotal to your plan. You know, don't just think to yourself, I'm in a green matchup here. I don't need to pay as much attention. So every game I gave a lot of attention to the respect it deserved. But I always like to play to my outs. You know, I'm the wrong person to put into a red match because I will try and
win. That was literally what I was just about to ask you as you were talking. I was thinking that because Luke mentioned you about like pairing into players. Like for anyone facing Darren at a future team tournament,
yeah.
how do you find going into reds? Like genuinely, do you think that's a weakness? Do you think it's something you struggle with?
I've not lost one at an international event, so maybe I'm the right person to put into them. I don't know. It's like there's a lot of glory that goes with. There's a lot more bragging rights if you win a red than if you. Who fucking cares if you win a green match? You know, who fucking cares?
Yeah,
if you win a red match, you fucking you're hard for days.
Then, I guess the pressure's flipped then, though, isn't it? Right? Because if you don't win a green match, then it's, you know, the pressure's back on, right?
There is a player who massaging his ego maybe is not a good thing, but
Jack Armstrong is
somebody that can do both. So me and Jack did a team tournament as a, like 400 club, at, like one of the blood types. And so he'd let me do the pairings, but he would let me. So at that point, he knew he will have known that he won't have got. So he had like 3 mega hard games, and he still won those games. Like, he won 2 mirrors after losing the roll off twice. And he beat Seraphon, which was insane then. It was the Salamander drop down, the list that I used.
Hmm.
So as much as Jack probably would never want to play a red, he can definitely play them, and he just always finds a way to win. So like Darren's saying, for a player that's like so experienced at the game that doesn't like to lose, is probably the right person to put into a red matchup, because they'll still try to find a way to win. And even finding a way to win means you get 8 or 9 points. That's like getting a 20-0 in a green matchup.
Yeah.
And then to win red is obviously that's what probably is. So that Darren says we were losing that round, but I'll take a lot of blame for that. Because in the pairing process, I got paired into a green, and so did Richie, but they weren't actually greens because we didn't read the mission. So I was playing a mission. that was battle. So I just beat 2 base Beasts of Chaos. So we're like, oh yeah, let's put him into another Beasts of Chaos because he'll take him out. Because nobody wanted to play Beasts of Chaos was probably the best army in the game by a mile. There was Terraform, but Beasts of Chaos was definitely better. And I've won the game now because I just do this and do that. And he's like, oh, no, you don't. That's not this mission. This is battle line, and it's the burning battle line one. So then I just lost 20-0. It's the first time I've ever been 20-0, and that kind of did shake me a bit. And the same as Richie. That happened to Richie as well. So that we straight away, out of 2 games, we got 0 points. Mm. So that meant that Darren and Jim had to win. Darren said Jim was in a red. He was definitely not in a red, though. He was playing double move dragons into Iron Jaws. But he still... He come from what Jim did is he come from a very bad situation of losing most of his army and still winning that game. That was what was really impressive. What Jim did,
yeah.
That obviously allowed us to win that round. So that just shows that having players that can win reds is
obviously very useful.
Team, yeah,
you have to be able to put a good under pressure though, haven't you?
Yeah, like, you do. Yeah. Like I said, if you hate losing, then you're always just going to find a way.
And you both mentioned having experienced players there into reds is obviously quite useful because they've been in that situation before. Kind of aligned to that question, there's obviously quite a few new players there. And so I guess the question for both of you, we'll start with you, Luke, is if it's a player's first time playing a big pressure tournament or Worlds, do you think they're better into the green or the red?
That's a hard question.
That's what I'm here for. No easy passes on this podcast.
I think they're definitely better in a green. But the problem is, if they lose the green, then their head's going to be fully gone for the rest of the tournament. Whereas if they lose a red, then they can use that as an excuse. But being bust is a term for like having a red matchup is... If you get 20-0, you've done horrifically bad for the team. Even just getting 1 or 2 points can be the difference.
Mm.
And that's been the difference in like a couple of tournaments that me and Darren have been involved in, like the first Brotherhood. Mm. If you got 1 or 2 points, so Nathan was using a pretty bad army, but he's a pretty good player. And he still got us like 1 or 2 points in like a horrific matchups, which was the difference in the end.
I was really sort of keen. I was hammering that into the whole team as well, you know. And when, like, at the end of each round, like, when everyone's, like, discussing their games, I was giving as much praise to the people that got 1 or 2 points as the people that were getting the 20-0s. Because I think Luke, just to, sorry, build on your point there, Luke, I don't mean to interrupt, but I genuinely think the people that win events for you are the people that get you more red points than other teams, because anyone can get a 20-0 in a green matchup, but not everyone can get a 4 points out of an incredibly hard matchup against an incredibly experienced good opponent. Not everyone can do that. So those are your people that you...
Yeah, yeah. And the issue is in teams is even like players that you would assume are not that competitive, well, their competitive level will just rise massively because they don't want to let the team down. So like Nathan, who generally just doesn't care if he wins or loses, at like that Brotherhood, he was getting down a bit because he's like, I just don't want to let you guys down in any way.
Mm.
So, and he didn't. We smashed it.
Yeah. I mean, you know, it's just an example of some players that go to singles will just want to go make sure they see their friends, are going for a bit of hobby and a bit of laugh. Everybody wants to win. I definitely believe that everybody wants to win. It's just it's the very select few that are literally going just to want to win. Whereas in teams, I think literally everybody is going to want to win, unless the whole team is just going for a party. But I mean, you may as well just not play Warhammer if that's the case. A lot of people use that excuse, but they'll definitely be building the team to try and do their best, at least, and not try and let the team break down.
Yeah, sure. I think, there's a difference. People want to go and have a good time and play Warhammer, right, rather than just like be at the top end. But I know what you mean. But although that was a both very good political answer from both of you, that wasn't the answer to the question. So, new players, green or red? Luke?
Red.
Okay. Darren, new players, green or red?
I'll give you my thoughts on it, if that's okay, because I've got a couple.
Yeah.
I think the normal sort of path for a new player is to be like to set them, or in my experience anyway, people will try and set themselves up as the bus boy, you know, or the bus girl. They will say because they're giving themselves an out. And I actually think I think that's wrong. You know, you want to, if you're a new player, you want to come on and say, yeah, I'm going to take these greens. I'm going to get you points. Because I genuinely believe your best players should be in the reds, not the greens.
Interesting. Okay. Yeah.
Because then it becomes the job of the people that are doing the pairings to get them nice, easy victories, which builds their confidence. Sure. But the whole time you're going into a team and you're saying, oh, please bust me, then you're going to keep getting really fucking hard games, you know, and you're going to keep losing and you're not going to build up that confidence. Whereas you're much more likely to win, you know, a green matchup than you are lose. And yeah, you might not get a 20-0. But for you, because this is coming from the context of the person, right? What should they be aiming to do? I think they should be taking the greens and they should ease themselves into it. And I think overall, as a captain, I would want my most experienced best players in reds and I'd want my newbies in, unless they were fucking dreadful.
Yes.
If they're fucking dreadful, then, you know, then there's nothing I can do about that.
Yeah, I'm going to assume at Worlds the vast majority of the players are going to...
You have to look at the personality as well. Some people, like Luke mentioned before, really fucking can't. They lose once and that's it, they're headgun for the rest of the event. Whereas, but, you know, if you so those people, if you need to know a bit about yourself. You need to be self-aware. If you are that kind of person, then, you know, then perhaps go in there and give yourself the out and try and be the bus chap, so that you can lose, but it's on your terms. Whereas if you're capable of taking a loss, go for the green. It's kind of, it's weirdly opposite, isn't it? I guess.
Well, it's a bit like the psychology episode that we talked about when we were asking how you deal with losses and whether you take them on into your next game or not in a tournament. If you're a person that can't shake off the loss, well, then going having reds is going to be pretty bad for the rest of the tournament, right? Because you're just going to keep taking it into the next round.
That's why beauty of the pairings is it's not just look at a Google Doc and look at what says green and red. That is probably 5% of pairings.
Mm. Yeah. So, well, 4% of your parents, Luke, because you're exceptional at it.
Yeah. No, but I mean, it's just the problem is everybody does that. So then, how do you know? Do you know what I mean? If you're completely relying on your players to do accurate scores,
yeah,
then you're just not going to win the tournament.
Well, not everyone does that. We were
yeah, yeah, good. Yeah, yeah. Well, a proof was in the pudding. So there you go. Hmm. Right. That was fascinating. So now, this is the fun part. Prediction. I need a little jingle. I need a little predictions jingle. So all of the countries out there listening to all of this, if you dislike their predictions, you can find them at Positive Victim and at @in_bin on Twitter. Let's go. So top three nations. Darren. Number your top three, and you can't say England because obviously. So England is not allowed by either of you. Top three nations, as in the highest finishes for this upcoming Worlds, please, Darren.
A couple of shout outs to some nations that I know have blown up, and I know are putting in like the hours and some work.
Oh, that's such a political answer.
No. So these are honourable mentions because I'm not sure they'll podium, but I think they're on a route where they might in the future.
Right.
I know Finland and Spain are putting in some real top-notch efforts.
I mean, Spain are putting in some hell of Twitter effort. I mean, yeah, wow, yeah. On the Twitter sphere, they are way ahead of everyone else. So there you go.
So I wouldn't be surprised to see them do better than they did last year. I think the American team they've taken, like, they didn't have access to as many of their solid players last year, and they've got more access to them now. And I think that we'll see that. And they seem
and they're just free. They're really free as well. They're always free. Yeah, there's full of freedom, that team. It's all
naughty.
Freedom.
Naughty.
USA. USA.
That's one of my dreams, is actually to start a USA chant. And I went to the castle last year and I didn't fucking do it. I'm absolutely livid with myself. Anyway. So I'd imagine that America are going to build upon their previous results. But for top three, I still it's an absolute machine, the French. Like their whole scene is geared around this event. You know, the first half of their season is people like doing singles, so then the captains can place them in teams, and then the last half of their season is just team events. You know, and then like 3 months before Worlds, and all their events are the Worlds pack. You know. and then they'll pick a team finally, and then they'll go away and do like a training camp with them as well. And like, I think one of the statistics that amazed me last year was once the lists were out, each person on their team played every one of our lists 10 times. Fuck me. I didn't play 10 games leading up to Worlds, let alone 10 of each person's lists. So I just think that's so that sort of work ethic is bound to get some results. I would be surprised if we didn't see Wales podium. I think they'll do well. And then my other tip would be Denmark, because it's some of the best, cleanest Warhammer I've ever experienced. Was the Danish. That you know, they bring a solid. They've got like this aura of like nothing fucking phases them, which I think is really important at like you know, at the top end. So they would be my three predictions if I can't pick England, who of course are going to fucking win.
And the Danes are really tall as well. Which
yeah,
might
really
help.
Tall, really attractive. Bless them. Yeah, good lads.
So we've got Darren's picks are France, Wales, and Denmark. Which order, Darren?
France, Wales, Denmark. Be France,
gold,
Denmark, Wales,
Denmark, silver, Wales, bronze.
Yeah.
Perfect. Luke.
Yes.
Any shout-outs, or do you want to go straight into it?
I'll shout out, and I'll be doing a disservice if I don't say this. One of my childhood best mates is on that team. I know you said don't mention them, but Team England should win Wales.
Oh, for God's sake, you both mentioned England. You're both rubbish.
I'll say number three, but I'm not going to let my country down. A lot of my very, very good friends are on there.
Are you saying I did let my country down?
And they should win Worlds. So,
oh, my God. Can't take these people anywhere. No England. No, you're not allowed.
I have got a top three, but they should win Worlds.
Right. So we'll ignore what Darren and Luke both said about England and into the actual...
The top three, I think Denmark, then France, and then Greece.
Ooh. Greece!
Greece
Ooh,
is a,
Greece spicy! Is a
Greece have, like, well-known players that do extremely well that have come over from the UK.
Yeah, agreed.
So they will be a dark horse that probably will smash a lot of teams that they don't know that's coming either.
Yeah, that's a good shout.
That is nice. I like that. And you're picking Denmark to take the gold. Is that right?
Yeah.
Ooh. See? I knew the tall ones would do well.
Silver, bronze and copper. And then we know who's got the gold. But we'll just...
Yeah, blah, 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 blah. But so what you're saying is Denmark are going to take the gold.
Next bet.
Wow. Okay. So there we go. Nations, if you're listening. Denmark take the gold from Luke and France take the gold from Darren. Very interesting. Okay. Cool. So lists. You could do lists. I don't mind you doing lists if you want to do lists, but I thought I'd make it slightly easier for both of you, considering you so struggled with not saying England in the last round. You can pick factions if you like. So, Luke, I guess we start with you on this one because you went second last time. What's your top three performing factions or list, if you want to, for this Worlds, do you think?
KO gets Lumina.
In that order?
In that order, yeah.
Okay. And do you think it's all going to be the same lists in those factions, or can you see it kind of being changed up?
The Thunderer lists for KO. And the herd list, not the crappy boy and grot list that they've tried to think is good. the combat KO, like, no, you're not going to win very many games against the good teams.
Yeah. So you think it's the multi herd
72 squid list. Herd is just the best gits list. There's not even a debate.
Yeah.
The boy and grot list is just trying to be a snowflake. It ain't gonna work out for you.
The squig herd list has Boingrots in it though, doesn't it?
Yeah, in MSU, but some teams are taking like 15 Boingrots in one unit. It's not gonna work out well unless they just bust their team to get a good matchup. It's hard to say because the worst list might just go 6-0 because they've just got the right matchups.
So you Worlds players out there that are playing the 15 Boingrots list. Yeah. This is recorded on the internet, so you get to come back to this when you smash.
You're going
bait.
Straight in that bin, right? I get to my draw in the bin. There you go. If you got some engine riggers in a boat and you think you're good, no, you go in the bin as well. You need 3500s or 3500s. That's the
right.
List.
Okay, and then finally is the all lighty elves, the flighty elves.
Yeah, let's go for the builds. I think the better build is more loads of sentinels and loads of wind chargers in sharpshooters. I think that's the best Lumina build, just because that is a list that will just beat KO and other armies. The Lumina list is very good at counter to the gits.
This is the techless build or the non-techless build?
The non-techless sharpshooter build that the French have taken, I think. Belgium have taken. Some of the top teams have got that list, and it's pretty impressive. I did like a little mini world warm-up TTS tournament, and that list was there. It does a lot
and good into KO, did you say? that one.
Yeah, because it can just do what I said earlier. It can kill the chemist and then kill the cloud and then the game's over.
Yeah.
It doesn't have to kill the thunderers then.
Yeah.
There's
yeah.
movement four doors that can't go anywhere.
Okay, so we got KO, Gitz, and Lumineth. I am recording all of this, by the way, dear listener.
Yes.
Right. Darren, any same or any spicy throw-ins in there?
I think KO, because all the vast majority of the lists have got the most points efficient war scroll that we may have ever seen. Absolutely stupid Thunderers are. They blow my mind.
130 points, baby.
Very, very balanced.
They just fucking do everything other than cast spells. Why do they do mortal wounds in combat? What the fuck? Anyway.
Why do they have rally and a 4-2?
What?
I love the fact that we were all assuming on as even on this podcast.
Oh, I'm still angry. Army's just so good. It shouldn't be in the game. I'm sorry.
When we were talking about this with Owen, and he was like, no, they're... only one of them does mortal wounds, it's fine. And then they FAQ'd it to let them all do mortal wounds. It's like, okay.
It's that oppressive. I didn't take it to blood type, even though I should have. It's that oppressive, I didn't take it, because it's just like, it's top of the food chain by a mile.
Yeah, by a country mile. So I'd be, unless, and the people that they're doing the pairings are going to understand that, so they're not going to be putting them in mirror matches. You know, you're not going to be, you're not going to be like 50-50ing back.
Yeah, because you don't want to risk it, do you? 50-50, right? So yeah.
So I think the top win rate will be KO. I think Gitz are still. What do I feel about Gitz?
How do you feel about them?
I do feel that they've. I'd really like how far they've been drawn back. So I like the fact they're still a very, very good faction, but they're like KO if KO had been nerfed correctly, aren't they? But I do think they've got a very clear plan, and it's a very hard one to break. And any list that can like win prio and do very well, and Gitz is one of these, just because like all the squigs coming back. And this is I agree with Luke, the squig herder lists are the superior ones in my humble opinion.
The bees bollocks.
Yeah, it's just a stupid unit, you know, absolutely stupid.
I mean, that list was the better list from the beginning.
Yeah.
It's like now everybody's realised that they can't do the hopper special, break coherency, rally all the dudes back. They have to do something that was probably already the best list.
Yeah.
It's woken them up and they're taking squig herd.
Yeah. So I think they'll do very well. I don't think the Lumineth will do better than the Beasts of Chaos lists that are there, because the Beasts of Chaos lists are really they're some. They don't necessarily win big, but they win. And in pairings where you get a lot of information about the scenery and you know the missions beforehand, and don't forget, well, do you get there's a phase where you get to choose what tables you're on as well.
Oh yeah.
I think Beasts of Chaos really, really, really do well into that. So I'd be surprised if Lumineth pipped them for win rate. And I also think this the things that you're trying to hard counter with Lumineth are very easy to avoid in pairings, whereas Beasts of Chaos is like it's like an experience, you know.
Beast is just a vibe. Is that what you're saying, Darren? The beasts are just a vibe. You're just vibing out at Worlds.
They're a harder faction to predict how they're going to be used, just by virtue of the fact that they can null deploy, you know? So yeah. I'd be very surprised if Beasts of Chaos didn't have a very high win rate. Not big wins, but I imagine most of the Beasts of Chaos wins are going to be 12-8s and 14-6s. Whereas I think we'll see more of those than we will Lumineth victories.
Yeah, I know what
you mean. But the Lumineth victories will be higher.
Yeah. I think the issue is that if you just defend with Lumineth round three on the pairings, I don't see how it ever loses. But the problem is if you're in a situation where you can't do that, then that's probably where they're going to come down, because they do have more bad matchups.
Yes, yeah, and that because that's quite known. you know, that's a problem that people are going to be considering within their pairing strategies, aren't they? So I think they're harder to wield in the environment. I could be wrong, but that's my impression. That's my take.
Yeah. I think the null deploy is, I think, just breaks people just from the get-go, from what I've seen from a couple of tournaments that happened in the last few weeks. For people that haven't played against it, they do some stuff that they might have just lost, and the opponent hasn't even done anything yet. They've just said it's all off the table.
You like to teach people, right, on this podcast?
Yeah.
Do you want to know how to beat ball gore beasts?
Go on, then.
So if you have 25 mil screens, have you heard of key locking yourself?
Is that some sort of weird sexual practice?
So if you have two 20 mil, say if you have two, say 25 mil screens or anything that can move through each other, you can like wrap the end, do little triangles with those two screens on each other.
Within each unit, you mean?
Yeah, and then they physically can't pull your screen. So then the ball gores, if they don't have raiders in the list, which a lot of the ball gore lists don't have, they can only commit to killing the screen then, and then they will lose because the ball gores fall over to pretty much anything.
Why can't they pull the through if they're 25?
If you can't fly and you've locked yourself in because you've wrapped each corner, you can't physically be pulled because you can't move.
Yeah. That's something.
I see what you mean. Yeah. I see what you mean.
So one of the screens would have to sacrifice their movement, moving an inch apart, and then the other screen then is free to move through the gap. But you can only do that with like 25 mil bases.
Yeah. So the Beastmen players and the coaches will know that, and they will.
If it comes out before, everybody will know it. But...
Yeah, exactly.
And you can also do stuff with flyers as well. So you could, like with Boingrots, you could wrap triangles around Boingrots, and then you're not locking yourself because the Boingrots can fly away, and then the screens are then free to move both of them however they want.
I really like that, but there's a lot of mental load right at the beginning of the game, and I believe that people have only got so much before their decision fatigue kicks in, and that is a great way to kickstart that process, you know. And so I would definitely be, if you're planning on doing that, I would get your head around it now rather than trying to make it up at Worlds, and you've only got like a couple of days.
Yeah, the problem with the Beasts have is they're on a time limit. They're on a turn two time limit, and if they don't commit and do the damage by then they're going to get tabled. If they can't get the jump on you, it's over for them because they're just ball gores that are moving really slow.
Yeah, it's very similar to the list I was trying out with the Stormcast, you know, the big hammer dudes, the Annihilators, that drop down and just whack stuff.
There is a Spanish guy going with, he hasn't got ball gores.
Hey, bro!
Bloodtithe, and his list is insane.
Yeah, his list is...
What's that? What is that one?
All the Ungol Raiders and Bellicor. Fucking millions of them.
Oh, is that what it is? Yeah. Literally just full of Raiders. I haven't seen that one. Okay.
Yeah, well, there's only one of them there. But yeah, that if everybody had that list, then I'd agree with Darren. Maybe that tips Lumineth. But I guess we'll see these predictions, right?
What's the prize, Alex? What's the prize if one of us wins?
I get the largest sum of the payment that Alex has given us for doing this show.
Yeah. You get to have the pride of winning the internet. That's what you get to have. And I can get Owen to make you some special...
I've already written everybody's list, though, so don't I win the internet already?
Yeah, but people don't agree with you, Luke. Stu says he's written half of them, so, you know.
I'm trying to bite my lip whenever...
And finally, just to finish off this Speedy Worlds episode, if either of you were going, because neither of you are going this year, unfortunately... Which list would you play? So, Darren, we'll start with you this time. If you were going this year, what would you take? And why?
Two drop, Living City, all the Luminarchs.
Would you actually?
Yeah, I would.
And why?
Because I think it fucks. I think it's a list that I think has got some very prominent reds and greens, which is always a very good for a player like me. That's always a very good list to give someone like me. And I think it's a lot of fun. I've used it a few times now. It solves a couple of meta relevant issues. Like, I think it's very good into certainly the KO lists that are, they're all more than two drops, aren't they? Or the vast majority of them are. So it just zaps out all the, there's very difficult for them to hide their characters, and all their characters are dead in a turn. Because it does like nine, it's got nine different sorts. The list I've got, it's got nine different sorts of AoE. So it just fucking pumps over a couple of turns. Like, once the ship's dead and all the characters are dead, the Thunderers are just walking about holding the dicks. So I think it's good into KO. I think it's good into the upcoming meta. I think it might be good into to Seraphon. We'll have to see. I mean, I played a game with Seraphon today, and fuck me. stupid faction.
But as in the new ones, you mean?
Yeah. There's a reason lots of people are getting them ready, put it that way. They are fucking horrible. They were even reasonable into Null Myriad, which I thought would be a hard counter. But they've got ways, they play differently into those. You don't try and kill them, you just try and get bodies on the board, and you try to sort of outbody them that way. It's still a very hard matchup, but it's not as hard as I thought it would be. I would take, it's my MO. I take something that is so completely different and bonkers that teams are going to have to, if they want to do well into it, they've either got to practice into it before the event. And that takes their resources from elsewhere, you know. So I think that helps you. If you like my three snake Basties and Croak list from last year, you know, if everyone else takes the same Seraphon list, then if there's like 20 Seraphon lists that are all very similar, and then there's one that's completely fucking batshit crazy, when people are practicing that in the prep, are they going to try and practice into the one list that's batshit crazy, or they're going to make sure they're good into the 20? You know, which allows you to then hopefully arrive, even though it's a bit of a, you know, even if it's been revealed beforehand, it's still going to be a surprise to them what it does. And I think also the list looks like shit on paper, but then in reality, it's much better than you expect. And that's where I live, basically. So I would take something that's a bit different, let's say.
Yeah, you're trying to get people out of their comfort zone and get into the... I'm going to have to play on the fly almost, right? That's
Because that's going to be magnified by the pressure that it's Worlds as well.
Yeah.
You know, and I'm going to be super comfy.
And are you allowed to say what this list is, or you want to keep it shtum for now?
Oh, no. It's a Living Cities with lots of Luminarchs and the Prime. And you can, in Cities, you can... You can coalition Stormcast units in, but you can also ally in KO as well. So the Living City, I've got a Navigator, I've got a Prime, I've got four Luminarchs, and then I've got a couple of, you know, the rest you can fill in as you see fit.
Yeah.
But I think it's really terrible into lists like Soulbright Gravelords that have got loads of numbers, etc. But I'm not taking it to singles. I'm taking it to a team event.
Yeah. Yeah,
I think it's got some very good greens and some very good reds. Luke's about to tell you how terrible it is.
Well, it's about to become out of date, right, with the new Cities book anyway. But, you know,
I had one person tell me that they were going to be legended and another telling me that they're in the book. So I don't know what to fucking do.
Oh, we'll have to wait and see, won't we? Great. Luke, what list are you taking if you were going, and why?
Stormcast, Karazai.
Yeah.
See, Stu said this as well. You literally are the same person, both of you. I've never seen you both in the same room.
I wouldn't take... So I made a Karazai list. Stu tried to copy it, and then he didn't work out for him, so he didn't. But I've adapted this Karazai list. So I'd take Karazai, a Prime, so Darren's favourite model.
Yeah!
Or Banners. So that'd be my hero slots. I used to run Vanguard Hunters in the No Monster Reaction, but I would run it a Knight Excelsa, and I'd run two units of three Annihilators up with shields, and then I'd have
the five tanky limits. Ones.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And three Praetors just to babysit Karazai. But the beauty about Worlds is that you know the maps. The terrain maps and the missions that you're playing in rounds. that army defended on stuff like only the worthy or Realmstone cash. There's not very many armies that can win against you, especially high drop KO. So that list, I'll just go, I'll put it in two drops. It would kill all your screens, and then the annihilators would drop down and hit your whole army with mortal wounds as well. So it's just the whole list is doing mortals, even Karazai shooting. And there's no escape on Realmstone cash and stuff like missions like that. And then you've got Prime coming down, Annihilators charging, and then maybe Karazai. So you could probably win the game turn one in some matchups. That is an army list that it would get you a massive green, and I'd know how I'd play that into nearly every army.
Yeah. Great. Okay, so we have Stormcast and we have Cities, so both on the order hype train for this. Correct. For this world. Okay, interesting.
Both doing massive mortal wounds.
Say that again, Luke.
Both doing massive mortal wound damage.
Yeah. I guess we'll see that with the Seraphon coming out, eh? So that is the end of our very short pre-Worlds episode. Anything you'd like to say for all of our budding Worlds players going out there, either of you? Anything you'd like
If it's your first time, you're going to have the best fucking experience. Like, it's so much fun. You're going to meet people from all over the world that love your hobby. Go fucking talk to them. Everyone in that room is your friend, I promise you. It's going to be fucking brilliant. Enjoy yourself. It's going to be an amazing time. I'm very, very jealous.
Just what Darren said is the highest point of, like, you should be competitive Warhammer, but everybody's so nice. You meet so many new friends, and definitely do shirt swaps and die swaps, just so you've got the memory.
Well, what a lovely comment to end on for this episode. So, to all the players going out there, do have an awesome time and enjoy it, and speak to everyone and enjoy the other teams. Thanks, Luke, for coming on and doing this this quick episode of.
Cheers,
so, thank you very much.
Yeah, cheers. Thanks. World's in the bin.
And thanks, Darren, for coming on, as always.
No worries, lovely.
And we'll be back after Worlds with the sexy sock seductor back, and he can tell us all about his two-turn games. So with that, thank you very much, everyone. Take care of each other, and we'll catch you all next time. So cheers. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Hey.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
Hey, everyone. Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.